Clark Bell.
Finally, at the White House the other day, made an appearance. Neil Armstrong said the following at the White House, quote, there are ideas, undiscovered breakthroughs available to those who can remove one of truth's protective layers. There are places to go beyond belief. End quote. That's Neil Armstrong. One more time. Listen to this quote. There are great ideas undiscovered. Breakthroughs available to those who can remove one of truth's protective layers. There are places to go beyond belief. End quote. Linda, are you there?
Yeah.
I found that to be more than just a little intriguing. The man seems to be suggesting there is something for us to know if we just dig.
Right. Well, the only, I guess it's sort of third hand removed, but when I was working on UFO report sightings in Los Angeles in 1991, I interviewed by phone and then eventually on for the hour special several of the astronauts. And in the research that I was doing with the astronauts, one of them told me something interesting. Said that he understood that one of the reasons that Neil Armstrong had not done anything publicly was that he was personally, Armstrong was upset because they had seen something on the moon, that it was silver and round. Mm-hmm. And that he and other astronauts, although they remain nameless, have been upset that there has been some kind of a, well, it's a tipped around word, cover-up.
Sure.
You could use a less conspiratorial sounding word and say simply, a policy decision was made that anything truly anomalous was not to be reported. Again, coming back where we left off before the break, to the idea that the status quo may be what the government or governments and various administrations have been fighting to keep in place for a long time. And even the announcement that there was a silver disk on the moon might have been considered too revolutionary for the Cold War at the time or a number of events. So now, the fact that Neil Armstrong would say something that is at least provocative, that is a provocative sentence coming from the first man to step on the moon.
Yes.
The fact that he would be saying that now may be an indication that what this other astronaut told me may have been pointing in the correct direction, that Armstrong does know much more than he's ever reported, and that one of the reasons for his own silence over these many years has been that some people have chosen simply not to say anything because they didn't want to have to mislead.
Well, I've seen a lot of interviews with the astronauts on television, Linda, and inevitably the interviewer will get around to a question, well, did you see any flying disc with a little chuckle or anything strange up there? And if you watch them carefully, inevitably they're very, very uncomfortable with that kind of a question.
That's right. They are, and the very fact that the I call it the mainstream media, not that it is more important or less important, but it is that there are the networks and CNN and others, and if they take a position of sort of implying with a smile or a smirk that even the discussion of some unidentified object in the sky is worthy of some kind of ridicule, it makes it impossible for legitimate scientists and astronauts and other people to feel comfortable in any discussion, even if they themselves know for a fact that there is some kind of humanoid intelligence out there that sends gray androids here and that there is something going on of vast proportions and somebody has a policy decision that we're not supposed to know about it.
All right, how about a few phone calls?
Yeah, love it.
All right, let's do it. On the wild card line, you are call toll-free 1-800-618-8255. Denise, I'm going to take that out, and we're gonna try and start all over again here. What we don't do is give first names on the air. So let's just say it's Denise in San Diego. How's that?
Okay, that's great.
All right, good. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, Linda?
Yeah.
I wanted to call up and say hi, and I had written you about a UFO sighting in Arizona.
Yes, I remember, and I think you're going to try to get me some photos.
Yes, and they should be back Tuesday, and then they'll be out to you and to Mr. Bell.
Wonderful.
Well, that's great, and is this a story that, depending upon how everything looks in a further discussion, we might be able to report some excerpts from it on the air later on?
That will be fine.
Okay.
Okay, and I just wanted to say it's great listening to your show tonight.
Great.
And thanks a lot for having Linda back on.
You bet. Thank you, and we'll do that, of course, from time to time. Linda, while we're on the subject of photos, I received one last week, and I've never in my life seen anything like it. And I don't know that it directly relates, but I want you to listen to this letter that I got. Dear Art, first let me thank you for the Daily Show and for the Dreamland program. It is fantastic radio. A week or so ago, I heard you talking about the Halloween show with a listener. I missed most of it, but if you're interested in ghosts, here's a photograph that may be one. A friend of mine, who was a stone mason, was working on an old home in Los Angeles on finishing the wine cellar in the old existing basement. He photographed his work for his scrapbook. When he developed the pictures, this is what showed up on one picture. He did not see anything when the photo was taken. However, on questioning, the architect was told that three crews, carpenters and so forth, walked off the project. It seems they felt very cold air, and some were pushed down the stairs by an unseen force. Since these photos were taken, I've talked to the architect and was told the home is about 100 years old, was listed for sale after the man who lived there died. The architect also told me that a Chinese man was interested in buying the home, but when they brought their priests to okay the home and bless it, they left in a hurry, screaming. Evidently, the new owner, who's having it completely renovated, knows about the ghost, but does not know what has happened to the workmen. Nor have they seen this photo. The friend of mine who took the photograph is a Muslim, a very religious man, does not have any interest or belief in ghosts. Just thought you'd like to see it. Now, he also has the negative. And what this photograph is a picture of some stone work that he apparently did in this home. And lo and behold, taking up about a third of the picture, and it's a high quality 35 millimeter photograph, is, I would say, a partially formed entity, clearly with a head, a torso, arm, leg, and it almost looks like smoke, but it obviously is not. You're able to actually look through most of it and see the stonework in the background. So that if you can imagine a kind of a very smoky, almost solid look in a couple of places, but half formed, that's what I've got. I've got this photograph, Linda. It is astounding.
Well, I'd sure like to see it, and I wonder, Art, when you say entity, is it humanoid shaped?
Yes.
So it's definitely humanoid shaped, and does it seem to have a human-sized head?
Yes, it would be proportionally, yes, would be a head.
All right. Yeah, maybe there is some way that you could get a copy of this and send it to me.
I'm already arranging it, Linda.
Great. Because there is a scientist I know, and we've spoken together in conferences, who studies ghosts. He's been on Unsolved Mysteries. And what I could do is also discuss this with him, do an interview for Dreamland in the future.
I would love it. I would love it. All right.
We'll do it.
All right. First time caller line. You're on the air with Linda Howe. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I've witnessed a couple of UFOs, but I wondered, about three different times in my life I reported every one of them. One of them actually turned off my car coming up the coast of Ventura. It was kind of a white phosphorus wedge that came flying at me at a very high rate of speed, except the car that it turned off had what they call a perfection engine, a $2,500 dragster type engine.
Mm.
And make a very long story short, we tore the engine apart and found out that the distributor shaft which has absolutely no friction on it, none whatsoever. Was just, it looked like it was cut by a hot knife. No twisting, no torquing, no burn mark, just like it was cut. But all it does is turn a little plastic rotor. And then it hovered out there, and I made some very detailed notes on a little vest pocket tape recorder that I had. I was recording some notes for business when it happened. I got out of the car, recorded the kind of what I felt was like a low resonance sound. I wouldn't even describe it as a hum. It was more of a vibration that you felt rather than you saw. And then it disappeared in the other direction. Now that was the third time I witnessed a UFO. Aside from the UFO topic, I wondered if Linda had any information on the black helicopters.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, Linda, what do you know about black helicopters?
Well, it is just an enormous subject, and the black helicopters have been associated with the animal mutilations going all the way back to the 60s, coming through every year and every decade. In my first documentary, A Strange Harvest, I interviewed the then head of the animal mutilation investigation in the district attorney's office in Trinidad, Colorado, a man named Lou Girodo, who is now sheriff of Los Angeles County. And when my camera was running across the desk from him, not only did he surprise me in his answer to my question, who or what do you think is involved with these animal mutilations, and he said that he and other investigators had come to the conclusion that it was creatures not from this planet, gave his own experiences of encountering big orange lights that split in two and were tracked on radar and went down into the ground, came back up out of the ground, all sorts of weird things. But he said he also come to the conclusion with other investigators that many of the silent helicopters that were seen above pastures, even in pastures in a few cases, in and around the events of animal mutilations were, this was his word, camouflage of some kind of advanced technology of whatever this intelligence was that was, you know, interacting with our planet, involved with mutilations.
Did he actually write that in the report?
No, it was in the interview, and it's in my documentary. In other words, he's on the film, and it's in the documentary. He's on camera saying this. And that was very important because I had heard things similar to this from other law enforcement, but Lou Girodo was the first law enforcement guy to go on the record. It's in the documentary, and he's never changed his tune. If you talk with him to date, he would say the same thing, that if this is an advanced intelligence and they have work to do on this planet, that it made sense to him that they would camouflage their operations so that we wouldn't pay any attention to what they were doing, just like, as he said, a good undercover police officer uses camouflage. And that was the his official point of view.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Linda Howe. Hi.
Yes, I was calling to ask her why. Why is it only small groups of people, maybe one or two or three, ever see UFOs?
All right, where are you calling from, sir?
Green River.
Green River, Wyoming. All right. Why do small groups of people seem to see them? It's a good point, Linda. Why not an entire city?
Okay. The idea that only small groups of people see something in the sky that's round is not always true. There have been mass sightings in Japan, and there have been beach scenes where people have seen something round. It is not just the one, two, three people. For example, if you go, you could say that five or six people is still a small group of people, but that's getting up into quite a few multiple eyewitnesses, and there are many cases now in the abduction literature where groups of people in five, six, seven, eight have not only seen something that they described as not being from anything they recognize on this planet, round and glowing and hovering in the air, but appear to be involved in where one or more of the people from the group have missing time, and then you get into the abduction syndrome. In New York City, Bud Hopkins has many cases of people seeing some kind of an object outside of apartment buildings and so forth in that very crowded city. I've talked with a woman who lived on the 21st floor of a building that was not too far from the UN, and she said that one night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, she was waked up. She did not know why she woke up. As many of the tall buildings in New York do, people don't have shades or draperies. They just have their glass window up when they're up on 21st and 22nd floors, unless there's a building close by. And she went into the living room, and she said to her complete astonishment, outside the window was something she couldn't see the end of it. It was round, and it was glowing red, and it had a spherical shape. And she said, I wondered how many people on the street might have seen it. The problem is, there may have been dozens of people down in the street who also saw it, but everyone is so afraid to report.
All right, caller. Anything else?
Yeah, and the other thing, 25 million people have seen UFOs, roughly. Something like that.
Oh, from the, like the Roper pole and so forth?
Something like that. Why is it, how many of those do you believe are true, and how many do you think speculation? I'll take my answer off it.
All right, thank you. Well,
that gets into the land of speculation.
Yeah,
because
sure does.
None of us know how to answer a question like that with any firm validity. All I can say is that if you and listeners went through the research files, let's say, of an engineer like Dick Haynes in California, who has amassed an enormous amount of data on reports from airline pilots, military pilots, people who are highly professional to be handling such responsible jobs as being military pilots and airline pilots, who have encountered objects in the sky, either pacing their airliner or their jet or their helicopter or some other military vehicle, and have made such reports, and many of them are so anomalous. And I think that one of our big problems here is getting to the general public enough of the hard data, of which there's a lot that exists, but it's difficult getting it all put together in such a way that it can get out there in a credible context.
And this will also sound strange, Linda, but the fact of the matter is, a lot of people don't look at the sky.
That's true, Art.
I mean, they just don't look at the sky, and what you don't look at, you don't see.
That's right. And I'll tell you another thing. I have had some communication with someone who claims they are reporting to me from inside government knowledge. Now, I can't prove that yet and may never be able to prove it, but they said something extremely interesting the other day. They said that they know that we're dealing with a technology that has the ability to deflect photons. If it deflects photons, it means that you could have an object, it could be a mile wide, it could be sitting up in the sky. If it deflects the photons that are radiating from it, there's nothing on the ground. There's no eyes, no animals, no any. At that level, the retinas are not going to see it. Now, that gets into the DA and sheriff speculation about the helicopters also being camouflaged. We could be dealing with an intelligence that has such sophisticated abilities to camouflage, deceive us, i.e. to work around us and among us in such a way that for the most part we don't even know it's there. And then you get down to the question, why does it reveal itself in these odd ways ever?
All right. Linda Howe, hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back with more calls. My guest, Linda Howe, you're listening to Dreamland.
Of Nine, we can continue with your calls on Dreamland with Art Bell. Call Art now, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-TALK. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. 727-1295 in the 702 area code. Now again, here's Art Bell.
Now again, here I am. My guest is Linda Howe. Back to her in just a moment. It's over a highway and having late model cars stop dead in their tracks while older cars continue to run. We've had three cases of this reported in the Salt Lake City area in the last 2 weeks. I've personally checked out the story with one of the victims. Any comments?
Have any recollection of anything that dramatically a contrast, and I would like very much to have any copies of a newspaper report or some of the people involved, if you have them. That's a very important, I think, that's a very important story, because it would perhaps give some insight into what are the frequencies or energies that come off some of these craft that would interact with new cars and not with old.
All right, I have a detailed report from the same person, which I did not read and which I will forward to you, Linda.
Great.
All right, back to the phone lines. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air with Linda Howe. Where are you calling from, please?
KGO.
KGO San Diego, yes.
Yes, I just want to talk about, if you hear about the SETI program.
SETI?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
The SETI program, NASA?
Yes. What about it, sir?
Well, right here in San Diego, we have a channel 29 with a NASA program. You know, it's sort of like a learning channel. And one of the speakers in SETI program speak about that they finally have a communication from an intelligent being.
Oh, yes. Linda, there were a number of reports that the SETI program has yielded some number, I don't know about a confirmed intelligence, but that they have apparently some signals that they consider not at all to be random. Had you heard anything about that?
Yes. In my book, Glimpses of Other Realities, at the beginning of Chapter 4, which I was going to write now, it's Time Magazine, June 21st, 1993, about a little over a year ago, page 19, quote, "After a year of the most intensive search ever mounted to detect radio signals from extraterrestrial civilizations, astronomers from the University of California, Berkeley have picked up 164 signals out of 30 trillion recorded that, quote, bear further investigation, unquote. This does not mean that ETs have been found, only that these anomalies have not yet been otherwise explained," unquote. That was in June of 1993. By the fall of 1993, just within a very short period of time, literally weeks of this announcement, Congress had cut the appropriations for that particular SETI program.
Right. Right. All right. And then this, Linda. Dear Linda and Art, love your show. Listen to it every week. My question. I heard that prior to the nuclear test ban treaty, a great deal of plutonium, which is extremely poisonous to life, was released into the atmosphere. I also heard the real reason that ETs were sampling the livestock population was to monitor the plutonium level on the planet. The idea is the plutonium falls out of the atmosphere onto the land, is taken up into the grass, which is eaten by the cattle. The plutonium is thus concentrated into certain organs of the animals naturally. Now, what about that, Linda?
There have been variations on that theme coming through both the abduction syndrome and even people who say that they have worked in government programs having to do with mutilations related partly to tracing something related to matter, atomic density,
some kind of contamination in the environment. The problem is that after 14 years of my investigation, I have yet to see a single piece of hard evidence that anyone has ever provided, and that has included people who say that they are working from inside the government, who show me that they have any hard information about why the mutilations are happening.
Still, wouldn't it be strange, Linda, if in the end all of this circled back to your original concerns and that the ETs have concerns that were very similar to yours?
Right, it would be very ironic if in the end
the following program has been pre-recorded for broadcast at this time.
Of concern both by ETs and humans.
Yes, it would be. All right, first time caller line, you're on the air with Linda Howe. Hi, where are you calling from, please?
Illinois.
Okay.
I can't hear you here, but someone called and asked me to please call because we found something very bizarre we can't get an answer to, and hopefully one of you do. It was a folded metal container, Army Green. On it is printed Ward Container, U.S. Army, MUST Project, Office of the Surgeon General. This thing is huge, and it was buried in the grass near a forest preserve, and we're wondering what in the world is this?
Oh, my God.
This is a farm area?
Yeah, farming and woods, lots of woods, near forest preserve, and it's M period, U period, S period, T period. It says U.S. Army MUST Project, Office of the Surgeon General. What does the Surgeon General have to do with the U.S. Army, and what are these containers for?
Well, that is a good question, and I might be able to find some answers. Could you give me the approximate size?
Yeah, they're about 8 feet high. If you stand it up the way the printing reads, it would be about 8 feet high, about 8 feet one direction, about 4 feet the other. But they're folded, and they're laying in the grass. They're not erected yet.
How many of them are there?
They're at almost all of the entrances to this forest preserve.
Wow.
Forest preserve,
acres and acres and acres of land.
So do you feel like there's a possibility they may have something to do with the structure of a gate or something that has to be...
That's one of the possibilities, because I suppose if you put them end to end instead of making a box out of them, they could be a gate. But nearby where this place is, there was a crash of one of those mysterious little black helicopters, and the local papers ran a story on it because some passersby came upon this thing. The Army was all over the place, but the pilot, they got there first, and the pilot was thrown from it. He was Asian. He had on a black jumpsuit with a white triangle in the upper left-hand corner.
A white triangle.
He spoke no English, but he had UN papers, and they were from a company in Germany, and I can spell it for you. It's called B-E-E-S-C-H, and the second word is M-E-R-K-A-T-O-R, and these were his papers, and they got the papers, okay?
And this was in a local news story?
Yeah, they tried to run it in the local paper, and mysteriously, nobody got their paper that night. It's been a real to-do out here.
Well, you know what I think? I think we better give you Linda Howe's number.
And yeah,
okay. I got a whole bunch
I would
stuff for you.
All right, ma'am. Okay. Do you have a pencil?
You bet.
All right, write down this number then. Okay to give it out, Linda?
Yes, please.
Area code 215-491-9840. Read it back.
Okay, 215-491-9840.
Yes.
Okay, now also there is, I don't know if you know about this group, but there's a group in Montana that's collecting all of these reports nationwide, and they might have an awful lot of information for you, and well, certainly anybody that would have information. It's
in
Montana.
Well, I'll tell you what, since I'm on the air tonight, in the morning, if you could give me a call, let's talk about this some more.
You bet, and okay. I can give you the number now if you guys want it for listeners that have information.
No, that's all right. We would have to check that out.
Okay.
Go ahead and call Linda in the morning, would you please?
I will do that. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Wow, Linda.
Yeah, it's a very strange series of things, especially this story about the black helicopter crash. If this is something that checks out, it is another indication of stories that stay bottled up in a local area. This was Illinois. I certainly have not heard about this.
All right. Well, we'll sure find out about it. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Linda Howe. Hello.
Yes. This is Phoenix.
Phoenix. Yes, sir.
I have two questions. Have either of you seen the movie Overlords of the UFO?
No.
No.
Okay. Am might send that to you. And the second question is, what is your opinion? I've been hearing more like Bible preachers saying that these things are real. There's no doubt about it, but it's like some Satan's.
Yeah, they're devils, right. Okay, sir. Linda, it's not just the religious angle, but since we don't know what these things are, we imagine them to be everything in the world. The religious people give a religious explanation, no surprise there. And other people talk about other dimensions or physical visits, and other people are talking about psychic avenues to find out what this is all about. Until we know, we're going to continue to hear just about everything, aren't we?
Yes, and I could recommend that people who are very serious about trying to understand this issue of could we possibly be dealing with something out there, not the whole story, but something, that is, to use a quote from a communication to me, is neither neutral nor benign. Now, there is a book called Messengers of Deception that was written by Jacques Vallée, approximately 1980 period.
Right.
It is a book that I would recommend many people to reread. I think that we are dealing with at least one aspect of the phenomenon that is using deceit and manipulation of the human population as to further its goal, whatever its goal is. Now, if a communication is pointing in a direction suggesting that part of the phenomena is neither neutral or benign, that's kind of a nice way of saying that whatever its goal is may not be in the interests of humans. The problem all of us have is that no one is providing hard proof of information from inside the government that says, this is what we're dealing with, this is what it wants, this is why it's here. Nothing is that clear, and that's what we would all like. It is also part of the same kind of communication. It is said that there are other intelligences that are benevolent, that are in this mix. And so, again, if there was one predominant theme that I think comes up over and over and over again, it is that we're not dealing with one motive or one intelligence, but we're dealing with more than one. There may be a conflict out there between something and something in which we, us, plants, animals, and humans on this earth are some issue in all this. And that's why I think it is so important for all of us to keep paying a great deal of attention to whatever physical evidence and eyewitness testimony we can get, because this may be the only way we get any clue into whether or not we are dealing with a conflict, and if there's a conflict, what is it about, and what are the implications for us, the human race, in the future?
All right, good. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Linda Howe. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is, excuse me, this is Martin up in Anchorage, Alaska.
Hi, Martin.
We've talked lots of times. I'm also a researcher in this subject, Linda, and am writing a book on extraterrestrial life, UFOs, from a theological perspective.
Right.
So it's, I guess, kind of ironic I got on at this time right after that.
You have a huge bit to chew when it comes to the theological background and the connections to this phenomenon.
Absolutely, and I find it really fascinating, exciting, challenging, and all of those things. I've studied theology, being one of the original hippies that got converted to a Jesus person and was what a lot of people considered a fanatic. I do believe in Jesus Christ, and I think that it's all tied in. I believe that the book of Revelations being revealed to us now, and as it said that it would be in the last days, I think this is all part of it. I would like to discuss this with you off the air sometime. I'll give you a call. But I've done a lot of research.
Call me or write me, and I'll make a point here because Art and Dreamland listeners know that I played an interview excerpt, I think it was in April. In fact, I know it was April. From a conversation that I did with Robert Emenager, who was the author of UFOs, Past, Present, and Future in 1974, and was involved with that documentary production with Alan Sandler. And in April, He did not qualify any. He said that our government or representatives from our government met with beings that had very large noses, vertical pupil eyes, meaning like a cat, with a ropey headdress rising above a domed head, holding a rod in the left hand with a coil around it, very much like our Caduceus symbol in medicine. And that they, basically, it boiled down to, Linda, the Sumerian gods of old came back, but they're not gods. They're extraterrestrial humanoids from someplace else in the universe, and that they've had involvement with our planet for eons. Well, that is a startling piece of information. And if it's true, then our entire recorded history may eventually have to be redesigned, defined, and reconstituted in the light of the fact that there may be something else in the universe that comes and goes on this planet and has had some direct and intimate involvement with the evolution of the Mesopotamian area, which is now Iran, Iraq, and the Middle East, and maybe the rest of this planet. And if you start going back that far, and if the alleged Sumerian gods were not gods, but were some humanoid ET, then, and if they've met with representatives of our government, for heaven's sake, that alone might be a reason why the government throws up their hands and says, oh my God, how would we tell the world this?
That's right.
But
well, we should be seeking the truth. And
I think so.
As religious people, I mean, if our religion is not the truth, we certainly shouldn't pursue it. We should pursue the truth above all things, and that's my religion. I do believe that Jesus Christ came directly from the Supreme Being, and somehow that's all going to come together.
All right, Sarah, thank you.
And we know this is one of the more difficult areas because everybody has personal opinions when it comes to the isms of the world,
mm-hmm.
but I want to stress that truth is truth. No matter how long we humans cling on to we're alone in the universe or the mythology of gods has to be something supernatural rather than extraterrestrial, that is just simply going to keep this generation in, I think, blinders. It is that next step that when we finally get to we're not alone in the universe, it will not be so upsetting to consider the possibility that an advanced intelligence interacted with our planet, and then we may finally get on to getting to what real truths are.
All right, onward. Wild card line, you're on the air with Linda Howe. Hi.
Yes, I am. Linda, this is Sunshine, Art.
Yes.
And I had the idea on about the birds or, you know, the other farmers eating on the dead animals.
Right.
You know, I think it has everything to do probably with no flow of blood because, you know, they know that it's not a natural death without blood. It's not a natural thing.
Yeah, that's a good point, Linda. Had you considered that?
Well, there's been a lot of discussions between ranchers and law enforcement and me on this issue, and most of the people who deal with animals, they seem to say that it really has more to do with scents and smells. At least that's their best educated guess. Animals are very dependent on their scent, and if something that has either an unnatural scent or the scent that they would expect to be there is not there. For example, there are many cases where mutilations don't even have maggots on them after 5, 6, 7, 8 days.
Hmm.
Something has happened to preserve animals, not in all cases, but in some. That must alert right there. There must be a difference in the smell of such an animal compared to what a coyote or that birds would be used to setting on or eating. And so I would think it's in that area as much as anything. The smell is probably different, and it upsets the animal.
All right. Well, on the toll-free line, you're on the air with Linda Howe. Good evening.
Yeah, Artemis. How you doing? This is Tim from KSD, St. Louis. Wanted to ask your guest, Linda. I called you a few times ago about I was one that witnessed the cattle mutilations where the flies were stuck to the tree.
Yes.
Right?
And I was wanting to know, I called Sally Rail and she never returned any messages, so I'm basically still here in limbo trying to find out what if she has any explanation for this weird thing that I witnessed.
Well, there were cases in, reported in Arkansas and I think one other southern state in the 70s concerning blowflies being found on a tree near a mutilation, and then in another case, the blowflies were dead on the animal.
Mm-hmm.
Blowflies don't exist in the Rocky Mountain states and above certain altitudes. You have blowflies really only in the more southern and lower altitude climes. So where that was reported, there was never any, to my knowledge, if there was an analysis that the government went there and secretly did something, it has not been made public.
Well, this was about 12 years ago up in Ellsbury, Missouri, and I still have a branch of the fly. Is that because I broke one off and kept
it? Right. Well, if you've got something that we could get to an entomologist, if it was not too old and too dry, it's amazing what they can find on out of dead insects.
Well,
I'd certainly be happy to help get that transported to someplace.
Well, I'd love to do that because, like I say, one fly is like still has its wings extended as if it was flying at one time.
Well, why don't you call me tomorrow and we'll talk about this and see what more we can do.
Well, I had another UFO guy tell me that the fact that the spaceships, before they open up, they basically do this to all the insects.
All right, sir. Again, we're out of time here, sir.
Okay.
So why don't you call her as she requests?
Will do.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
And let me give out that number again. It is area code 215-491-9840. Once again, area code 215-491-9840. Also a good number, by the way, to order Linda Howe's documentary at $35, or A Strange Harvest, 1993. Actually, that is the documentary. Glimpses of Other Realities at $45. Linda Moulton Howe, our guest, back right after the top of the episode. This...